This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry. It is an on-the-air tape that is one of a series, and it is tape number 16. This consists primarily of a recording of my appearance. I'm Vin Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry, on a radio show, the Catholic Radio Hour, hosted by Richie Bucci out of Syracuse, New York. And I think that's about all you need to know, other than the master was supplied to me by Richard, and I don't think it's of the highest quality, but I'm sure you can hear certainly what went on and appreciate and enjoy it. At least I hope you will. Thank you for listening. God bless.
What I want you to do, I want you to hum to yourselves for a minute. Just hum.
There's going to be some dead air for a moment, but don't let it bother you. It'll be worth the wait, I'm sure. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be a different program. Last evening, I had a conversation with my good friend Vin Lewis, the founder of All Roads Ministry. And what we were talking about, the situation out in Lincoln, Nebraska, where Bishop Fabian Bruskowitz has given Catholics who are involved in organizations such as Catholics for Free Choice, the Masons and Planned Parenthood and nine other organizations, he's given Catholics who belong in those organizations till May 15th to get out of those organizations or they are excommunicated. Now, you folks who listen to our 2:30 program, yesterday afternoon, you heard a Monsignor Thornburg, T-H-O-R-B-U-R-N, and myself talk about this. And I was talking to Mr. Lewis, who's on the line here with me, and I told him that included in the list was the Society of Pius X. And then I'd like to welcome to Catholic Radio.
Thank you.
And then, you do not belong to the Society of Pius X, do you?
No, I do not.
But you do attend the indult mass?
That's correct. On Sunday, I'm fortunate that I'm able to attend the Tridentine Rite of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass.
Tridentine Rite.
In other words, it's the old...
excuse me.
It's the old rite, which is said completely in Latin.
Okay.
And I prefer that, by far, over what is called the Novus Ordo Rite, or celebration, which is the newer... shall we say, universal celebration.
Right.
Now, and I'm going to repeat myself, ladies and gentlemen, Vince never was, nor is he now, a member of the Society of Pius X. Is that correct?
That's correct.
However, I'd like to have our listeners hear your reaction to the fact that the Society of Pius X was included on the list with Planned Parenthood, Catholics for a Free Choice.
Well, to put it as mildly as possible, I would call it shock due to what I consider a massive injustice. Because such organizations such as Planned Parenthood and the euthanasia societies, whatever they are, or even the Freemasons, are by their nature anti-God. They're anti-life. They are inherently, intrinsically, and utterly immoral. They are evil. Anybody who joins those is evil for one of two reasons. Either because they know exactly what they're joining, they advocate and help that organization achieve its evil purposes, or they are ignorant of what's going on, in which case they are evil because they could admit a massive sin of sloth. Just to want to give one quick, very illustration of this, I remember Charlton Heston, who is frequently trotted out as a pro-life spokesman on an old crossfire on CNN, discussing with a Planned Parenthood official the policy of Planned Parenthood. And he said, I wish you would stop killing babies. And the Planned Parenthood official, of course, evaded the question. And then Charlton Heston said, you know, I'm one of your major contributors, and I wish you would stop doing this. Which makes me convinced that Charlton Heston has the IQ of a stupid snail, but he's also an extremely evil man because he knows exactly where his dollars are going to death camps. Now, I just use that as an illustration that you can say Charlton Heston doesn't know it. Well, he's required to know it. So the man who joins the Freemasons or the person who gives money to Planned Parenthood has the obligation that all humans have, of seeking, knowing, and serving the truth. And if you do something without seeking, knowing, and serving the truth, your ignorance is infernal, damnable. But that aside, to lump those organizations, Planned Parenthood, alleged Catholics for Free Choice, the Hemlock Society, the Freemasons, etc., with the Pious Defense Society is completely, in my opinion, and I'd be very happy to hear any argument on the other side, but I can't conceive of it. It is, in my opinion, a terrible injustice. Because the people in the Pious Defense Society hold, in essence, depending on various degrees, shall I say, of fanaticism, that either the current pope is a heretic, or the current pope, that is John Paul II, is not the current pope. Now, to simply argue over certain policies of a church official, and quite frankly, I think they have very good cases against individual policies, is massively different than aligning yourself on the side of Satan against God. I am not saying by any means that everybody in this society, St. Pius X, is a good person, but their stated purposes are to perpetuate, foster, encourage, and preserve traditional Catholic morality, theology, and ways of doing things. How can anybody oppose that? They get into, in a very real sense, a personal disagreement with John Paul II. And I've had personal disagreements with John Paul II. He's not one of my favorite popes, and I'm severely critical of him in many areas. But the point I'm trying to make is simply this. To lump those people in the same category as Planned Parenthood is lumping Francisco Franco in the same category as Joseph Stalin. Utter nonsense. Were they both dictators? Yes. But Francisco Franco served the good. Was he a perfect man? By no means. Did he suppress communism in Spain? Yes. Did he suppress freedom for the survival of Spain? Yes. Did he save Europe from going either Nazi or communist? Yes. That one man probably changed the course of history for the better than any other man in the last 300 years. But to now lump him in with Joseph Stalin, who was personally responsible for the deaths of millions of innocent people, is to completely lose the rational faculties and the rational ability to distinguish between degrees of error as opposed to degrees of immorality.
Interesting. One of the callers from the society, a member of the society, said to me that she considered this as an overt attack on the Society of Pius X.
Well, I don't think, I don't know why she even used the word considered. It has to be. What else could it possibly be?
But do you think, to your mind, do you think it goes beyond what happened in Lincoln, Nebraska? Do you think there's something, a bigger picture here?
I'm not a conspiracy buff, but I think it's idiotic to deny that conspiracies could exist. So let me advance one only for speculative purposes. I think that sometimes organizations, and regardless of what the church is, it's a human organization. It's
right.
Divine, of course, and it has certain divine functions in which it cannot fail. But it is administrated on earth by men who, like the rest of us, tend to be sinful at various times and have their own internal politics. This may be an experiment in the true sense of the word. It may be an open attack on the Society of Pius X, which is masquerading under things which Catholics will accept. This is pretty much what politicians do when they want to get a bill across. They put 9 things into a bill that they sent to the president that he'll accept and 1 that he rejects. Now, if he vetoes it, they run that he ran against the school prayer. He vetoed school prayer. Really, what he vetoed was, let's say, too much money for another dam on the Colorado River. But you can interpret it either way. So perhaps, and I'm only saying perhaps, this is actually an attack on Pius X, which, by mixing them in with the other organizations, makes it appear as if it's a purifying, vigorous, masculine attack on evil and defense of the faith. Because when I first heard this, and I only heard it again through the mass media, all they said was that a bishop somewhere or an archbishop somewhere was announcing that certain Catholics had to be out of certain anti-Catholic organizations by April 5th. And then they mentioned Planned Parenthood, and I almost fell on the floor. I said, my God, some bishop is finally doing the right thing. Now, maybe he's doing the right thing, and he's made a mistake on Pius X, a perfect possibility. Maybe, however, he's actually attacking Pius X and doing this, and it's done as an experiment. Notice, Nebraska, very interesting. It's a, I hate to put it this way, well, we're on the East Coast, we can say it. That's a nowhere part of the country. That's an easy place to run an experiment and see what happens. Nobody really cares. If it works there, then you try it in New York and Los Angeles. And if it works in New York and Los Angeles, you have the mass media on your side and you've won the battle. So this may be an experiment. This may be the first crossing of the line or the first tentative attack, and it's done in a secretive fashion to see what the results are.
Ben, do you think, if this is so, and this is purely speculation,
that's right,
of course,
purely speculation.
If this is so, is it possible that this is stuff that was orchestrated on this side of the pond and not on the other?
Oh, it's possible, but I don't know if it would be, how likely that would be. I go back myself, having been in bureaucratic organizations, both the New York State Police and the Army, that at various times superiors will tell you, I want X done.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, but I'm afraid to accomplish X, I have to violate regulation Y or law Z. And they say, I want it done. And you say, but are you telling me to violate the regulation or violate the law? And they say, I'm leaving it to your own judgment. I want it done.
Sure.
Don't tell me how you do it.
Sure.
Now, if, say, a rule came down from the Vatican or from a congregation over in Rome and said, I'd like pressure put on these people. Well, how could I possibly do it? You're a bishop. You got brains. You figure it out. Don't tell me. I wouldn't be surprised at all, because then they can always wash their hands of it later and say he did it independently. We gave him no instructions. This is the class. I remember one time again in the Army, I was given a suggestion by a superior. He made it a strong suggestion, and I disagreed with it, and I said, I'm not doing it. And he said, why not? And I said, because suggestion, not an order, and it's wrong. Make it an order, and I'll do it, but then you take the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And all he would say was, I strongly suggest you reconsider your opposition. And I said, I'm not reconsidering anything. Have enough guts to make it an order or forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, because he wanted the credit if it succeeded.
Sure.
But he wanted to be able to wash his hands of the blame if it didn't.
Understood.
For an archbishop to do this on his own, if he actually just came out again, things like Planned Parenthood and the Hemlock Society and the Freemasons, I would say, hey, his guardian angel whispered in his ear, or the Blessed Mother finally got through to him, and
yeah,
he's doing the right thing. But if he throws them in, I see it more of having aspects of a lot of good and a lot of politics. He may be sensing, and this could be, again, pure speculation, but maybe in that area, society tense people may be very strong. They may have a large number of churches. He may be losing money in his local parishes, and his own parish priests are complaining to him, we can't keep the contributions up if these people continue to go to the church down the road and give their money down there. So therefore, you have to do something. I'm only speculating,
this is pure
but speculation. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's the case.
Mm, very, very interesting. Ben, please tell our listeners about your ministry, how it got started.
Okay, briefly, ARM, which is what we call All Roads Ministry, got started. I always joke about this. It was like a life. A woman is pregnant before she knows it. This organization existed before I knew it existed. And it essentially grew out of, I would say, more of a series of recreational interviews I did with Protestant ministers, which came about, interestingly enough, because of the fall of Jim and Tammy Baker, who I used to watch on TV and liked. And when they got in trouble, I went to an Assembly of God church and asked them what the story was, and they told me the real story, because, of course, didn't believe the mass media. And then when they were leaving, they asked if I'd be interested in a statement of their beliefs, and I had a vague interest in religion. That's not the strongest I could say about myself at that time. Although I was always a Catholic, I was a lukewarm one at best. And when they showed me the statements of their religion, I laughed at them because they were, in a true sense of the word, idiotic.
Yeah.
And I said, could you please explain this? And they said, well, here. And I said, well, what about X? And they wouldn't answer. And what about Y? And they had no answer. And the lady finally asked me to see the minister, and he had no answers, and then he said the statement, which I think was perfectly illustrative of Protestantism. When the end of our time came, and I started to finally get the tough questions, he literally threw me out, politely, but threw me out. And he said, I asked him, may I come back and discuss these issues with you another time? And he said, no, you may not. And I said, well, okay. And then as I was walking away, he said, come on back now, be sure you return. And that struck me, and I thought it was just, in the true sense of the word, one idiot.
Yeah.
So out of curiosity, I went to check another idiot, and another. And about 200 idiots later, I realized that non-Catholicism is idiocy, by definition. All non-Catholics have killed their minds, destroyed their souls, and cannot think or reason correctly anymore. They're like eunuchs. They can no longer do what a man is supposed to do because they have severed the natural functioning of their body by a mutilation. And what I did was I began to take notes that I would ask these ministers in an organized fashion, and ultimately I was trying to convert one, and because I had a limited amount of time, I recorded an audio tape for him to listen to, which was essentially to prove for Catholicism. And then when I decided that this audio tape was worthwhile, so I duplicated it for a couple of friends, and ultimately out of that, the organization grew. And what we are now, primarily, is an educational and motivational organization which is designed to educate and motivate Catholics to defend, explain, and spread the faith by right reason and the Bible. And we do this by essentially instructing them and an awful lot of nagging, which is what I'm really best at.
Nagging?
Yes.
Is that because you're half Italian?
No, I don't think. I'm half Sicilian, please. Sicilians are not Italians, and Italians are not Sicilians.
Oh, that's right.
And we are both happy about that.
Ben, tell us about your military service.
Well, briefly, one of the things I always try to do is to avoid as much as I can my own background.
Yes.
The reason is
that's okay if I ask you that.
No, it's all right, but I'll be semi-vague.
All right.
The reason is I always want people to understand that they can do what I do regardless of what their background is. So when asked about questions of my background, except for a few incontrovertible facts, I simply admit to being a high school graduate. And then I always say, but being a high school graduate in those days really meant something.
That's right.
I joined the Army in exactly 1968, and in June, if I remember correctly, and I was let out in April of 71, and I joined and volunteered to go to Vietnam because, in the true sense of the word, I wanted to kill communists for Christ.
Hmm.
Now, I remember that was a T-shirt at the time, but I never understood it as a joke. I always understood it as correct. I always thank God that the war of my time was outside of the Korean War, the only justified war the United States ever fought in.
Whoa!
It was a war. What? They were, or they were the justified wars.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
May I rein you in on this one?
Of course, absolutely.
Did I hear you say that next to the Korean War,
yeah,
the Vietnam War was the only justifiable war
correct
for us to be involved
yes
in?
None of the others were justified.
All right, please, please, please.
Yeah.
Tell me about World War II.
World War II was not justified. What we did was help one thug kill another thug so that the more vicious, nasty thug could kill more people. World War II led to the direct conquest of Eastern Europe by the Soviet Union and the death of uncounted number of people. It also led directly to the conquest of communist China by the communists. You want to talk about dead people, you have about 50 million dead people versus about 3 million dead people. If dead people is bad, then we made sure the mafia won rather than the thug on the street. Because the mafia was Stalin and Mao. We made sure they won by wiping out the anti-communist force in Europe, which was Nazism. Now, Nazism was not a good force, and Adolf Hitler was not a good guy. There's no two ways about it. But compared to Joseph Stalin, you're talking about someone who steals a dollar from Woolworths as opposed to somebody who runs off with the funds of the Teamsters Union and leaves hundreds of thousands of people bankrupt. Because the numbers killed by Stalin and Mao absolutely 15, 20, 30 times more than the numbers killed by the Nazis.
You know what you're saying, but I'm saying is that our media, you implicate our media with this because they never put that story out in any volume.
Because they are communist-leaning. There's no two ways about that. But the point is this. I mean, let me give you just one fact. You want to talk about the media? Just one fact about World War II, right? Does anybody know what the word Nazi stands for?
National Socialist Something or Other.
Now, how do you call a socialist a right-winger?
True.
It was a fight between two forms of socialism. And even today, you will get idiot Jews, that's not an anti-Semitic remark, it just means that some Jews are idiots, who will say that fascism is always fatal to Jews. No, because Franco was a fascist, and Franco saved more Jews than any other person on the face of the earth.
That's right.
Mussolini was a fascist, and there were no death camps in Italy. Mussolini was scum, too. But no death camps in Italy. Fascism is not fatal to Jews. Nazism is antithetical to Jews and leads to their death, but not fascism. This is a misuse of the words designed to distort the truth so that people won't understand it. And if you want to talk about people who have been persecuted and slaughtered, how many did the communists kill that were Jews simply because they were Jews? I mean, how many of us saw bumper stickers in New York City saying "Save Soviet Jewry" because the Soviet Union was wiping them out as a people?
Yes.
But nobody points that out. And I always got a kick out of it that when the Jews would always say "Never again," and then ignore the fact that the Soviets were doing it.
Yes.
But what else is new? It is because there is such a communist leaning in the media, and I say communist leaning, and I mean that precisely. I meant the party line of the Communist Party, which was headed out of Moscow. I'm using my lines very precisely. I'm not talking about Bolshevism. I'm not talking about Marxism, which are variations of a similar ideology. I'm talking about a party line that came out of Moscow. And what I'm saying is the media favored the communists in Vietnam.
The media
favored the communists in the Soviet Union. If you, again, you're old enough to remember it, and I suggest this to anybody who wants to do the research, go back to any Time magazine article, any Newsweek magazine article, go back to any 60 Minutes, any network news thing that was broadcast on life in the Soviet Union before the fall of communism. And what you will find was that their doctors were more intelligent, everybody had free medical care, everybody was equal, everybody was wonderful. Once it fell, everything reversed. To somehow where they didn't have medicine, where nobody was trained, everybody was ignorant, and everybody was slowly dying of diseases. So the point was, all of this was lies before, but they freely admitted that they covered it up. Absolutely. I mean, again, Khrushchev and Stalin starved to death how many? 10 million Ukrainians in the 1930s?
Absolutely.
And the New York Times specifically had reporters denying it existed. Once again, we, by helping that horror fight Nazism, kept it alive. If America had stayed out of the war, those two horrible systems might have bled each other to death, and that would have been better for the world. So therefore, there was absolutely no justification for going in.
Now, the Korean War.
And does anybody remember that the Soviet Union was on the side of the Nazis in the beginning of the war and only changed when Adolf Hitler stabbed Joseph Stalin in the back?
Exactly right.
Stalin invaded Poland on the same day that the Nazis invaded Poland. And everybody say the invasion of Poland started the war? Yes, and the Soviet Union was on the side of the Nazis.
That's right. And Joe Stalin, as I recall my reading of history, acted in disbelief. He did not believe the report that the Germans were attacking the Russian troops.
No, because he believed... Well, I think what it really came down to is he knew Hitler was so much of the type of guy he was. How could my brother, go against me?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. Take us to the Korean War now.
The Korean War was just war. Oh, absolutely. Because you had a completely godless, antithetical to God, immoral invasion of one country by another.
Mm-hmm.
You had the North Koreans, who were backed up by the Chinese communists, who by definition were inherently evil, invading a better country. And therefore, you had a complete act of aggression, completely unjustified, and so therefore the United States was justified in its defending it. But just as long as we're on the subject, I always thought it was rather funny that Truman was praised for dropping the bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki when he should not have and did not drop the bombs on the invading armies of the North Koreans when he could have. Because it was suggested right away when they sent down three massive columns invading South Korea, if you drop three atomic bombs on these three columns, you end the war immediately and you kill almost no civilians. You kill all combatants. And he refused to do so. I often wonder why they think he was a great president. He was a sissy coward with glasses who never played football and resented real boys who did. He spent all of his life in the library like all sissies.
Boy, am I going to get some letters.
Hey, send them to me.
Anyway, is it true that the British put pressure on Truman not to drop the bomb?
I don't know. I can't tell you.
Okay, let's take it back. Let's go back to, let's go forward a little bit to Vietnam.
Right.
What, in your mind, were the mistakes made by, not by Johnson, but by Nixon?
Nixon did not end the war with a victory when he could have.
Right, exactly.
Very simple.
Exactly.
If he, just think about it. During the entire time of the Vietnam War, okay, towards the end, they started to mine Haiphong Harbor, mm-hmm. which was the major source of war material coming into North Vietnam. They mined it, but to my knowledge, not a single ship sunk. Not one time did they ever bomb Haiphong Harbor. Not one time did they ever put pressure on allies like Canada
yes.
and England to stop giving war material to North Vietnam, which was killing American troops, as well
exactly
as South
right.
Vietnamese troops.
Exactly
not
right.
once. That war was fought from the beginning with the sole intention of losing it.
with the sole intention of losing it.
There's no other way to explain the behavior. Everything was done to lose that war. Absolutely everything.
Who were the real bad guys in the scenario?
In my case, Robert McNamara, who I still accuse in my heart of being a communist traitor, and I'm saying I know exactly what I'm saying. I mean a card-carrying communist traitor. Let's remember, Alger Hiss, who was a card-carrying communist traitor who gave plans of the atomic bomb to the Soviet Union, was the number two or three man in the State Department under Roosevelt,
yes,
advising him specifically at Tehran. When the post-war occupation of Eastern Europe was set up. These are not speculations. These are facts. The point is this. What? That the Soviet Union has managed to place, did manage to place, high-ranking spies at the very top positions in the United States government. And for anybody who doubts it, I think I remember the name specifically. I think it was called Song Mai. Song Mai was a prisoner of war camp. During the Vietnam War, and if I remember correctly, I was over there because I read about it in Stars and Stripes, so I think it took place in early 1971. There was a raid planned on the Song Mai prison camp, and the guys who trained for it in America set up a mock system in Georgia. And what they did was camouflage it so the Soviet Union could not take pictures of it and figure out what this place was. The way I heard it was this. Something like 11 men in the United States government knew where they were going. The guys who were going on the rescue mission themselves did not know. They were never told. 11 men knew about it. Only 11 men in the top levels of the government. When that mission was launched, 1 hour before they arrived, all the prisoners were moved. One of those top 11 turned and told the government of North Vietnam, the communist government, that this raid was coming to the Song Mai prison camp, and all of those prisoners were removed.
So
which means one of the top 11 men in the United States government was either being blackmailed or was a conscious, willing communist traitor. There's no other possibility.
The name Judas is not a 2,000-year-old word, huh?
No, of course not. And I always say the same thing. Robert McNamara.
Robert McNamara.
Absolutely.
Watergate.
What about it?
Set up?
I don't know. I really don't know. I consider it a rather trivial thing all the way around.
Well, we're running a field here, but...
Yeah.
Now, let's go back to Vin Lewis.
Yeah.
You served with Valor in Vietnam.
Well,
okay.
I don't know how much you want to get into it.
No, we won't. We won't.
That's it.
But I
thought it was very interesting. I was a military advisor with small units over there with what would be considered the local militias of the Vietnamese and Mountain Yard people in the Central Highlands.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed a lot of it very much. I didn't enjoy some of it. The part I didn't enjoy is when I had my natural rebellion come out of me. And I fought with the army and got very angry and essentially deserted for a while. But that's another story. While I was gone 31 days, they could have shot me if they wanted to.
Oh, my word.
But when I came back, they said, listen, we're going to ask you one question. Were you justified in what you did? And I said, sure. And they left me alone.
Beautiful.
The reason was they took me out of the field, and I wasn't going to sit behind any desk.
Mm-hmm.
So once they put me behind a desk, I ran away. Frontline soldier. I was not a rear echelon person.
This is tremendous. So then you came back to the state.
Yeah.
And is that when you joined the state police?
Yeah, short time later, briefly.
And you were a New York State trooper?
Right.
For what, 12, 13
A little
years?
Over 12 years.
And then you started this All Roads Ministry.
Yeah. State police fired me for mouthing off all the time. I was a whistleblower.
They fired you?
Yep.
They just told you to...
No, they didn't just tell me. They spent an awful long time building up a case.
Is that right?
They tried three other times. The fourth time they succeeded. I was always a rebel.
Well, a rebel with a cause.
Oh, sure. As they thought, I was a religious fanatic. I always joke, they fired me for being a Catholic, but as I said, they should have found me not guilty. To the world, I was a religious fanatic. At the time, I realized I was hardly anything at all. But even trying to deuce any element of morality into a police department is literally fatal to the police department.
Wait a minute. Whoa, run that by me again?
Trying to introduce any element of morality into a police department is fatal to the functioning of the police department. They have to get rid of you. Police departments are inherently immoral, all of them, by definition. They have to be.
Oh, my word.
They function on lying. And if you don't lie, you cannot function as a policeman. You cannot. They function on lie, deception, fraud, and violation of... I'm not talking about constitutional rights, because those are just words on pieces of paper. I'm talking about human rights. See, I'd like to...
With that remark, let's turn over to side two, where the tape will continue. Thank you. This is ARM audio tape on the air, tape 16, side 2.
Trying to introduce any element of morality into a police department is fatal to the functioning of the police department. They have to get rid of you. Police departments are inherently immoral, all of them, by definition. They have to be.
Oh my word. They function
on lying. And if you don't lie, you cannot function as a policeman. You cannot. They function on lie, deception, fraud, and violation of... I'm not talking about constitutional rights, because those are just words on pieces of paper. I'm talking about human rights.
See, I'd like to set you loose on this district attorney Fitzpatrick here in Syracuse.
Oh, he'd admit it if you were, like, off the record. He'd have to.
This is... Well, we can't get into that right now.
Okay.
We may be on a future broadcast.
Let me put it this way. I think as a result of original sin, all human institutions are inherently inefficient and self-contradictory. There is no such thing as a police department that can function and do its job without becoming inherently immoral. And I mean that sincerely. You either have a Soviet-type system where you have one crime, one arrest, one conviction. We don't care if it's the same person, but our numbers look great. Or you have an American one where you have rights brought in which case you cannot prosecute the guilty. So which do you go for? What you have is what you have now. You have a whole bunch of lying people who occasionally get crooked people, usually for the wrong things, and put them away. And everybody just sort of says, well, that's the best we can do. And quite frankly, that is about the best we can do because of original sin and because of the refusal of men to repent and reform and submit to God's will.
Hold that thought. We're going to do a station ID
okay.
now.
There was a slight break in the master. When we pick the conversation up, I will be describing what will happen to anyone if and when they call Carl Keating, one of my, shall we say, opponents or competitors, and ask him why he will not debate me in a public forum on our differences.
Great. And then this is what will happen. The person will say, you know, I know he was speaking English, but I didn't understand a single thing he said for the next half hour. Because people have done this, and I always is the same. Will you confront Vin face-to-face on these charges? Will you call on God to sustain you? Will you call on God to strike down Vin if he's wrong? Will you therefore triumph because God always takes sides in these things and who's right and who's wrong, and the right can never, ever, ever lose. Isn't that right? And you will never get an answer that you can comprehend. It is like if you understand 12 words of Spanish and somebody speaks very quickly. So let's give the telephone number out. Here we go. Area code 619-541-1131. That's this rock. Carl Keating in charge. Once again, my charge is that Carl Keating is an atheist. I told him to his face. He usually just laughs when I say it. Pat Madrid is also an atheist, although I think he quit. And that they are doing things the wrong way. Seriously wrong. They are false Catholics, atheists, and heretics. They're all combinations of the same. I'm willing to make my charges into their face. But the only thing is, I will never again have a private conversation with either of them because they lie about what went on. So every conversation now will be on in public or on the record recorded.
Well, we'll give them that opportunity.
Yeah, I'd love it. What the heck? I got nothing to do. It'll take me about 20 minutes to destroy them.
Man, I understand that people don't want to climb into the ring with you anymore. Is this true?
I wouldn't either if I were evil and wrong and just wanted to get the beat, unless you got a masochistic streak. Hey, there's only one... the point is this. I'm debating 2 plus 2 equals 4, and everybody else is debating 2 plus 2 and 2 don't even exist. So the point is, I win. Understand, it's not I who does this stuff. It's God who works through me. That's why I can make statements which seem to be arrogant. As I've told people, I have had approximately 750 confrontations, debates, antagonistic conversations, interviews, you name it. My record is 750-0. I promise that if anybody shows me one thing wrong with Roman Catholicism, one thing wrong, I will leave the faith immediately.
I got a call coming in.
Can I tell
you? Yeah, why don't you do that?
I'll be right back.
All right, do that then. Well, my friends, looks like I, your host of Catholic Radio, and you... got more than we, certainly that I bargained for.
Back.
Okay, Vin.
Yeah.
I was just telling our listener. Well, go ahead. Finish your point.
Well, my point is simply this. You have to believe, if you believe in God, certain things follow. Number one, God will never desert you when you're doing the right thing.
Yes.
Never. Therefore, if you submit your will to His, if you accept His truth in humility, when you defend His faith, not yours, you can never lose. So therefore, I make what appear to be arrogant claims. Number one, if you can show me anything wrong with Catholicism, I'll leave it immediately. I won't think about it overnight. I won't say, well, I'll get back to you. I won't look up something in a book. Number two, if I cannot defend every Catholic dogma from the King James Version of the Bible immediately, not I'll get back to you, not, well, gee whiz, I'll have to look that up, not let me look in the original Greek, right then and there, I will leave the Church of Rome immediately. I make these claims at once, absolutely. And as I also told you off the air, but I'll say on the air again, I have $500 for anybody who can present to me any honest, honorable, non-Catholic in any field at all, period. What I'm saying is not only is there no salvation outside the Church of Rome, there's no honesty or honorableness or morality outside the Church of Rome. I got a big debate coming up in Corpus Christi, Texas in May, and the premise of it is three other guys and I are debating Church of Christ officials. All non-Catholics are inherently immoral. Now, people say, that's ridiculous, Ben, blah, blah, blah. Then I say, here's your point. I got 500 bucks. Put me in touch with the friend that you are convinced is Joe Lutheran, Joe Buddhist, you know, Harry Hindu, who's moral, who's good. Let me ask him questions. Let me record the conversation or do it in your presence. At the end of one half an hour, I'll turn to you and say, did this man expose himself as evil? If you say, no, he did not, he is still honest and good, I'll give you $500. I ask only one thing. Before you render that judgment, you swear to God it's the truth on your soul.
Wow.
And the point is, no. And one of the points was when I made this offer to Carl Keating, and I said, Carl, you're always looking for money. You're always complaining you're out of, you know, hundreds of Protestants. Put one in touch with me and you got $500. And he said, I wouldn't submit anybody to you, Vin. Exactly. Carl knows they're all dishonest, too. And I repeat it, all dishonest. There's no such thing as honesty, honorableness, or morality outside the Church of Rome.
Even though that we, the members of the mystical body, most of us are
horrible,
horrible warts.
Wait a minute. I'll say it also, the same thing. There's an awful lot of immorality and rottenness and corruption inside the Church of Rome.
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
And I am a leading example of it. I am not a good person, but I'm a superb apologist.
Tremendous. Let's go back to the police department.
Sure.
Please repeat what you said about I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, it's all right.
Pick up where we were before the break.
In essence, no police department can function in a moral fashion. By definition, a police department must function immorally. And if you try to be a moral agent on a police department, one of two things will happen. If you are quiet, if you are passive, they probably will tolerate you. But if you advocate good, they will have to destroy you and get rid of you. The same way a human body has to get rid of a cancer cell, or the cancer cell will ultimately kill the human body. Virus. You cannot function in a moral fashion. I try to function sometimes, not often, but, you know, maybe 20-30% of the times, as in a moral fashion on the police department, and that's why they blew me. They fired me. I started to blow whistles on immoral practice.
Tell us something about the marriage breakups amongst police officers, if you would.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we were talking about this last night
right
off air.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, your brain is so quick, I'm going to have to hear it again to digest it.
Well, what I was saying was that I always found it interesting, because while I was doing scheduling in my station, that the married guys wanted to work what we call then the C line, which was the 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night shift.
Mm-hmm.
The married guys. Single guys wanted to work the 7 in the morning to the 3 in the afternoon shift. I thought it would be the other way around, because you think the married guys want to go home, be with their wives and children when they come home from, you know, kids come home from school, wives there, et cetera. So what I did is I ultimately asked them why they wanted to do this, and they told me they didn't want to go home to the same wife. So what they would do is they didn't want to go home and see their kids. So they'd go home and drink. Instead of going home, they'd go to drink, go to the bars, close the bars down, come home at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, wife and kids get up in the morning, leave the house. They can go 5-6 days without seeing their children, which is exactly what they wanted. Then they would drink, and then they would blame that somehow this was, that the job was the reason their marriages broke up. Not because they didn't behave like decent fathers and husbands. Not because they refused to see what their children were doing to give their wives any attention. Not because their wives were sleeping alone, feeling, as they should have felt, completely rejected. And I always said to the guys, why are you marrying these women if you don't want to go home to them? That seems to be one of the definitions of who you're marrying. And the point was, that I was driving to drive at is, I think, in a very real sense, the immorality of the culture and the immorality of the police department reflects itself in the breaking of the marriage bond. And in a very real sense, once you get to the point that your word means nothing and you'll perjure yourself in court, and, you know, I'll tell a very quick story. It's like a Mark Furman story. It's
sure
hilarious. There was a black man who was suing some police departments up in this area. There were like three or four that responded to an incident. So he wound up suing three different police departments, and he felt it was a civil rights violation. And he was suing them in New York City, and I saw the transcripts of the court. And what happened was these policemen would get in the car, drive down to the court, which was about a 70-mile trip every day, wait to be called, then drive back up again. So the defense attorney has one of the police officers on the stand, and he's saying, while you drive down, do you discuss the case? So the man says, the police officer says, no, no, absolutely not. He says, you're telling us you drive this distance every day, twice, you're all in the same car, and you never discuss the case? Oh, no, sir, we would never discuss the case. And he kept asking it over and over, and the police, no, sir, no, sir. So the judge, in a moment of sanity, beautiful transcript to read, interrupts him and says, counselor, stop asking the question. I know he's lying, you know he's lying, the jury knows he's lying. Go on to the next question. And you see, that's exactly the point. Is lying and immorality have become so pervasive in our culture that you, at the same time, you're supposed to be remarried forever. So what you do is you look for an excuse to break up. Mm-hmm. And the excuse for the policeman is perfect because the garbage that the policeman offer is the job is stressful.
Yeah.
And as I pointed out to you last night, and I'll point out to anybody, a policeman's job should be among the least stressful jobs in the world. First of all, you get to travel as fast as you want in a car with a light on. That's exciting. It's fun. You can put the siren on and just race up and down the road. People get out of your way. You know how exciting it is? That's fantastic. Number two, you can put your hands on your gun and act cool anytime. Okay? Number three, you can pull over hundreds of people a day, not give them tickets, but just look at them, smile, and call you nice names. Oh, please, officer. Oh, I really know you have to do this. Oh, please, could you give me a break? Oh, well, go, my son, and sin no more. Oh, thank you. How do you think you feel after somebody's done that to you 100 times a day? You feel like God. You've made people happy. You've pulled them over and scared them, and now you've forgiven them. They're on their way, and oh, isn't this wonderful?
How often did you do that?
What? No, I mean, for satisfaction? Never.
I mean, to just give a guy a break that was, you know, you mailed him speeding or whatever.
Well, you see, the point was, I was one of the few, I gave tickets to approximately 20% of the people I pulled over.
Oh, boy.
The average most, I'd say, was 80%. So I reversed. My reason was, I didn't want to make the guy's day on bad.
Yeah.
You know, a real human being that you give a ticket to then goes home and feels sorry about it.
Yeah.
Maybe he fights with his wife.
Yeah.
Maybe he picks on his kid.
Right.
You set up this whole unpleasantness that continues to circle for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to say cops should give out tickets to everybody, but when you look at a real human being with real eyes, with a wedding ring, when you see his job order book on his chair, when you realize that this guy makes his living off of his license, it's different. Now all of a sudden that's a real human. So you become a little compassionate, and it makes you feel good, but I didn't pull people over for the purpose of them making me feel good.
Understood.
And of course you could always play jokes with people, which we did a lot. I mean, you could when you're dealing with the more stupid elements of the culture, which you always were, the elements of society, you could go and have fun with them. You could play, you could have endless fun with drunks. I saw guys do that all the time. And I mean, not vicious fun, but you would just have word games with them. You know, a happy drunk, and you play word game with them and confuse them and everything. You know, so the point is, you had a job in which you could have fun, satisfaction, adulation, worship, you name it, anytime you wanted it. All right? And by the same token, you never had to work. As I tried to explain to you yesterday, there's no such thing as an overworked policeman. Because you simply don't respond to the calls you don't want to. You just sit down like a donkey and don't work.
Oh, my God.
So what do? You have radio problems. You don't respond to the radio. You don't go. And, I mean, this is very common. I mean, I guarantee you live in Syracuse. I guarantee you if you open the calls to the black people in Syracuse, they'll tell you about calls they make to the police, and no one ever came. Because the guy on the desk recognized a black neighborhood or a black voice and just sloughed it off. Because we don't care about them.
Well, we've had some things like that in the press, though.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course. Because I don't want to go there, because the black guy's going to give me a hard time, and then I have to earn my money, and then I have to do something, and then I'll gee whiz. But the point is, that type of endless dishonesty, not earning your payroll, not earning your money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think carries over to a spiritual disorder, which ultimately destroys your marriage. But the thing about the police, which may be why they have a higher rate of divorce, is this automatic built-in excuse. My wife couldn't take the job. And as I pointed out to you, there were numerous policemen I knew who, as long as I knew them, remained very well married in long, strong marriages. Why? Because the husbands were faithful, and they thought about themselves as husbands and fathers, and they took that role seriously.
Husbands and fathers first.
Well, maybe not first, because, you know, it's really hard to say, but the point is they still took this role seriously.
What percentage of police have those kind of marriages?
I would say, unfortunately, about 20%.
About 20%?
Yeah, at the top. But, you know, what can I tell you? You know, I think it's the situation, not so much that police is worse, but police have an automatic excuse. You can always come up with the automatic excuse.
Well, I'm always under stress. I never know when I'm going to come home alive or dead. Oh, that's probably good, you know.
Ben, speaking of the police, in Syracuse, every Thursday, we go down to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Pray the rosary from 1:30 to 2:30. It's a Catholic homeschoolers group. There's about 20 of us down there, some mothers. Sometimes there's a dad or two and all these little kids, and we're out there praying the rosary. There's always the Syracuse police officer on duty at Planned Parenthood, either in the building or outside the building.
Sure.
And we were told that these men are working, are not being paid by the city, but are being paid by Planned Parenthood. In other words, this is their day off or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, the big question mark in my mind is, every once in a while, a cruiser will go by, and one of the fellows will jump out, and he'll bring coffee into the Planned Parenthood and give it to the, man that's on duty there. I find that kind of curious. That's going on. Is that something the cruiser should be doing?
Should be? No, of course not. But it's epidemic. Tell you a real quick story.
Sure.
I think I told you on the air. I, as a policeman, used to shoot for working 4 hours a day because I knew everybody else was working two at best. And that way I felt wonderful and I could goof off for the other 4 hours without having a very bad conscience. So I figured I was working more than anybody else on the state police, but less than anybody on assembly line. Hey, what the heck? I deserved it. I was a wonderful guy. But the point was that one of the things I tried to do was to be the first guy out of the station and the last guy back. So who did they grab the first guy out of the station to go on the coffee run up to Dunkin' Donuts? I was the one picked, and I hated it. I hated it. So what I did was I learned early. When I instead of getting money after I got paid, which was the normal way to do it, you go up there, spend your own money, come back, here's your coffee, donut, you owe me $1.50. Oh, I don't have it today. I'll give it to you tomorrow. I used to get the money first and never have change. In other words, that's all right. I'll take a $5 bill. Get me tomorrow. Number two, I always made sure on the way back I get delayed at something. Gee, here's a car which may need help. Gee, maybe this guy's tire's going to go bad. So I thought of some legitimate excuse to pull somebody over. So what did it mean? All the coffee was cold. And, of course, you know, those Planned Parenthood guys, Dunkin' Donut guys, they weren't always so sharp, and neither was I, because sometimes they would put the coffee right on top of the donut, and it would fall over, cover would come off, and it would soak the donut right through. So the point was they learned, don't send Lewis on coffee run.
Wonderful.
And what I also used to do, it drove people crazy. I felt we were entitled to one break in 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to Planned Parenthood. If we were two in a car and the other guy was senior, he wanted to go, not Planned Parenthood, I don't know why I'm saying that, Dunkin' Donuts. He'd go in once, I'd go in with him once. He'd go in a second time, I'd sit in the car. I couldn't stop him from going in, but I'd sit in the car.
Right.
I wouldn't go in. Drive him crazy. I said, fine, I don't get paid to do this. You'll get paid to do it. I'm not going to turn you in, but I'm going to intimidate you out here. So what are you asking? You're asking for men not to give coffee to their fellow officers? You know what will happen? Their tires will be slashed in the parking lot, and I'm not joking. Now, tell me a guy who's got enough moral courage to defy that. I did until my tires got slashed, then I compromised. I gave up. Didn't compromise. I completely sold out. I don't want my tires slashed anymore, guys. I put a notice up. Please don't slash my tires anymore. I'll do what you want.
Ben, what's the state of the church in the United States today?
Well, you got to be very careful. If you're talking about the human hierarchical aspect, it stinks. But if you're talking about the part that God sees, I think it's never been better.
Explain that, please.
Right now, look who's talking. A layman and a layman.
Right.
And what are we both talking about? We're talking about Catholic issues, how to get better, Catholic actions, apologetics, evangelism, morality, spirituality. If this were 1950, it'd be priest and Monsignor, and there would be nothing but lay people listening, nodding their heads. When you get calls on this, you'll get calls from active Catholics who either agree or disagree but want to talk about serious issues. The point is, right now, the church is in the hands primarily of lay people who actually care about saving their souls, who care about obeying the law of God, who care about using the church as a way to get to heaven, and are interested in raising their children correctly. And I'm telling you, in the 200 and something years of the United States, I don't think that's ever happened before. Because up until now, we've been like the priests, like the Protestants accuse us of, priest-ridden.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I grew up pre-Vatican II, and in those days, there was no such thing as a Catholic organization that didn't have a priest everywhere, every time, watching it 100% of the time. Boy Scouts, Holy Name Society, you name it. Now, even though these organizations frequently fail, when they're founded or refounded or reestablished, it's by laymen. And that's exactly the point. The lay people should be doing this. Back in the old days, it was the priests. So what do we have in the old days? we had a very thin veneer of apparent Catholic action being led by clergy, who turned out to be primarily corrupt because most of them left the church as soon as Vatican II let them.
Mm-hmm.
But now what do we have? A much larger, well, still relatively, excuse me, still absolutely small, you know, excuse me, relatively small, what is it, like 5% of the American Catholics actually care about their faith, if
sure.
that? But the point is, what was it back in the old days? 1%? So what do you have? In the old days, you had 80, 90% of the people attending Sunday, Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, because it was the ritualistic thing to do. Now you have 10% attending. But of those 10% attending, 50% of those are attending for the right reason. Massive improvement. Massive. I can't tell you. See, I'm very fortunate. I sometimes use George Bush's line. 1,000 points of light. People have no idea how many honest-to-goodness good Catholics there are out there struggling to live the faith, to defend our Lord, our Blessed Lady, to defend, to evangelize, to raise their children correctly, and are doing it independently, which means going directly to God, which means, although this will sound ridiculous, Protestantizing the Catholic Church, which is exactly what we should be doing. We have to stop thinking as the priest as our means to salvation. We have to think of them as somebody we step on to get to God. They're a bridge.
They're a servant.
That's exactly correct. Servants of us. We tell them what to do. We don't carry them around on sedan chairs. And they are only a means to get to God. And if they get in your way of God, shove them aside and find the other one. Quit giving them this idiotic reverence, which the gray-haired ladies, you know, the gray-haired white 59 years ladies left, oh, he's such a wonderful priest, blah, blah, blah. Those are the people who destroyed real meaning in the faith. We have to be real men and real women and have our personal relationship with our Lord, which is what saves us. Now, we call it sanctifying grace. The Protestants put it better. That personal relationship with your Savior, your personal Savior, our Lord Jesus. What is it like? When the Protestant asks you that question, what the Catholic should be saying is, I don't know, but I better go to confession to straighten it out. And that's the point. There's more of us now thinking about that personal relationship and getting personally in touch with God, I believe now, than has ever been in the history of the church.
Bravo. I love it. I love it. Ben?
Yes.
God bless you.
Okay.
This hour just flew by.
Hey, okay, no problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you again, Ben Lewis, founder of ARM, All Roads Ministry. What we're going to do this evening in our program, well, you know, we carry the rosary 6:30 to 7 every evening. But at 7 o'clock, Ben Lewis will be back on a telephone hookup. In the interim, I'd like to have you folks call me. I'm right here broadcasting right out of my office at 488-8868. That's 488-8868, 315 area code. If you're calling long distance, make it a collect call, please. That's 315-488-8868. And let's talk about what you heard, and let's get people to participate in this evening's program. At 7 to 8 p.m. on this radio station, 105.1 in Central New York on the FM band, and 96.5 in Syracuse. God bless you. Thank you. We'll be back to you. Be well. God bless you.
Hello, Katrina.
The time got away from us. Katrina, hello. With your point that you wanted to make about the Society of Pius X, I'd like to remind you at this time that Catholic Radio is totally listener supported. If you like this
guy. Okay, everybody. Now, what you just heard, a rebroadcast of the 1:30 to 2:30 program today. That was a rebroadcast. We originally were trying to have Ben Lewis back live this evening, but because of the volume of phone calls we received this afternoon, people were asking us to replay this at 7, and we did. If you want a list of Ben Lewis's tapes, there's over 260 tapes. Call me at 488-8868. That's 488-8868. The 315 area code. Now, it's approximately 7:52 p.m. I'm standing by the phone. 488-8868. That's 488-8868. 315 or so, calling from out of town, call me for it. And I want your reaction to tonight's program. We've had some great reaction. I'm not going to tell you what percentage pro, what percentage con, but the reactions are tremendous. This program has done exactly what I wanted to do, was cause these Catholics to think. You know, I have a copy of a letter written by the late, great Bishop Sheen in 1938 when he was a Monsignor. You know what he said in the letter? We are afraid we may offend somebody. But the Catholic Church has known for 2,000 years that argument, intelligent, spirited argument, sharpens the wits, the minds of the Church. And this is what we need today in this time. We need to wake up the lukewarm Catholics. Wake them up. What did Jesus Christ say in the Gospels about the lukewarm? He says, "I'll spew you out of my mouth." So you're either for Ben, what he's saying, or against him. It doesn't matter. I want to hear from you. And I also want to know if you want to hear more of Ben Lewis. We can bring him to you live. We can bring him to you on tape. You want to hear Ben Lewis. Now, let's go back to the studio in a moment. And Tom is going to play us some beautiful Jewish music. But before he does that, I just want to remind you that Catholic Radio comes to you 1:30 to 2:30, Monday through Friday. And then again, 7 to 8, Monday through Friday. And Catholic Radio brings you the Rosary, 2:30 to 3, Monday through Friday. Brings you the Rosary again, 6:30 to 7, Monday through Friday. And we bring you the Rosary at midnight. Nobody else in the United States is doing that. The Rosary 15 times a week. It's unbelievable. God's hand is on this radio ministry, I'll tell you that, because we started with nothing. Goose eggs. Everybody said it was going to fail 3 years ago when we started. But the Blessed Mother's got her hand on it. You want this to continue? Have you got the guts to be in the front lines with Catholic Radio? If you do, support us. Okay, Tom, back to you. And I'm waiting for your calls, folks. Let's get these calls in and let's have them hot. Hot calls. Go, Tommy, go.
This ends the tape. Hope you enjoyed listening to it. Hope it was a benefit. And all I can say is if you wish additional copies of this tape or any other product from ARM, contact me at ARM55 Palin. That's P as in programming, A-L-E-N, Road, number 38, Hopewell Junction, New York. Thank you for listening. Ben Lewis here saying God bless you.